From the Atlantic to the Pacific, across the islands of the Caribbean, from mountain crest to mountain crest, from canyons to the clouds and into the cosmos, we're pumping wattage high and low, plus streaming worldwide on the internet and keeping you company tonight. It's the place to relax and hang out. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange, giving you the latest and discussing the weirdest. We've assembled the finest team of reporters and the most intriguing guests, and that's why we are your favorite hub in a wild world. So keep it tuned right here. Well, as I'm sure you know by now, it's a very exciting hour because I have one of my great friends and a great friend of the program back with us tonight this hour. You have seen him on Ripley's Believe It or Not. You've seen him on the Steve Harvey Show. You've seen him on Stan Lee's Superhumans. He is the human stun gun. He is a death touch master. I mean, he is involved in every type of mysterious and metaphysical research you can imagine. He is Grandmaster Tom Cameron, joining us tonight from Chicago, and that's where he calls home. How you doing tonight, Tom?
I'm doing real well, Josh, and yourself?
I'm doing great. Happy, as always, to have you with us. And before we dig into your big announcement, what's been happening since we last had you on the show? Anything new and exciting?
Well, on a personal level, I got divorced, so I'm up and out on my own now. It's fascinating because it's the first time in my life that I've ever lived on my own. Mm-hmm. I've always either my folks lived with me for a time, then I was married, then my folks lived with me when their health was in question, and then I ended up married again. So this is the first time in 61 years that I'm actually responsible solely for myself, and I find that it's been a very interesting and a very cathartic type of experience. I'm becoming a very different person. I think the next time that we actually meet in person, he'll be quite surprised by some of the physicality that's changed.
Well, you know, I've never lived alone either, and I find that when you are more or less always in a domain or a domicile with somebody else, it's a little trickier sometimes to meditate or to find, you know, those quiet moments when you can sort of dig deeper into your inner self. Have you found that this is easier for you now that you have a little bit more of your own space to work within, so to speak?
Well, there is definitely that, and I've also been able to manipulate or alter the energy in my space where I've got it as feng shui accurate as possible. I actually have the colors for the correct directions and the pictures or portraits of the animals that belong in those directions and the correct elements aligned in the house, and it's really producing a very a much more, for me, calming type of atmosphere. I'm much more aware of the change in energy and find it to be much more and therapeutic is the wrong word, much more cooperative, I guess, where I don't feel like I'm fighting the atmosphere as much.
Mm-hmm. You know, before this last break, I was talking about a news story regarding Microsoft. They are working on a project right now taking DNA strands and turning them into basically computer chip storage devices. And there are scientists working on this project who believe that if successful, that one DNA strand could essentially hold as much information as the entire internet right now. And when you start thinking about this idea that life may be composed of these sophisticated chips in the form of a DNA strand that are the key to our consciousness, it kind of sounds a lot like maybe that's what God did, huh? I mean, maybe God figured out how to create these ultimate little storage devices and assembled them, and that we're just now sort of figuring out how we ourselves work. But as a guy who is, you know, always studying that that interface between physiology and energy, I mean, how do you feel about that topic?
Oh, I think that that's absolutely incredible. As you and I have discussed before, I mean, there are times where when I'm working energetically with my students, where all of a sudden I'm having trouble delineating whether or not the thoughts that I'm having are mine, or that I'm actually reading theirs, or that I'm having a memory that they had passing through their head at the same time that I was working with them. So I believe that there's absolutely the possibility of a continuum. It's going to be real interesting when we learn to read and or decode those DNA segments, where we can actually get readable feedback from it, to find out what types of messages were placed on those. We might find out that that all of a sudden you're going to have encoded messages from the creator, whoever that might be, or some lower levels of creator that actually designed us. And you know, we might find out that we're all stamped made in Mars or something.
Well, yeah, and of course we collectively as a society we're becoming more and more mindful of all the things that we have in common. I mean, the internet was a big, big step in forming this sort of cohesive community where people around the world can potentially all come together and instantaneously start sharing ideas. And as we move and advance along those lines, it's fascinating to see how that there are opportunities arising for people to come together and to start sharing their experiences more. And I think that ties in pretty nicely with the project that you're working on right now. Would you like to tell everybody what you are assembling?
Well, yes, absolutely. Most people might remember that I have an annual paranormal conference that I host up here in the Chicago area in October. This is going to be the fifth anniversary of it, and in order to expand and get greater outreach to it, we've decided that we're going to hold a national, or and I suppose it could be international if we can reach that far, documentary film competition for all things paranormal. It's called the Richard T. Crowe Documentary Film Fest, named after the guy that actually originated ghost tours and things like that in the Chicago area. Rich passed away a couple years ago. He was a friend of mine, and so we've named the documentary competition after him. But it's a competition that welcomes all filmmakers, all producers and such, to submit films for there's a small cash award and of course the enormous prestige of being awarded the Crow Award. It's a trophy of an actual bust of a crow. So I think it's pretty neat. The it falls into actually six different categories. One is for ghost hunting and proof of life after death. Another one is for UFOs and other types of contact of other beings, and then the third one is general miscellaneous types of paranormal things like cryptozoology and psychokinesis and things of that nature. And each of those is then divided into short films and long films.
You know, I've always thought it's interesting when you're in my position, as you know very well, being a guy who has a lot of toys, as they're often called, various instruments, electromagnetic field meters and Geiger counters and Kirlian cameras and all that. You can go out there into the field and you can document some of the strangest things that are happening in the energy environment. But ultimately, at the end of the day, when you start talking about your findings, whether it's on TV or, I guess, especially on TV or on the radio or whatever, ultimately, people, they want to see it. They want to see it to believe it. So, in other words, I can tell you about tracking some floating electrostatic field up and down a staircase in a haunted house, and you might find that interesting, but not nearly as interesting as actually seeing some misty form that's moving up and down that staircase. And then you have a clearer idea of how to interpret what might be going on. And so this concept of a really well done, you know, paranormal documentary contest, film festival, is exciting because it's going to I guess, spotlight people who have either been at the right place at the right time or who have just put in enough hours to capture something that's really stunning and visually significant. And I would love to think that in this day and age, somebody might bring even some good 3D footage if that's something that might be an option, because I have found that it's so much easier to analyze a 3D picture than it is a traditional 2D image, and there is very, very little out there in the 3D realm and regarding the paranormal. I don't think I've seen like a good 3D picture of a full-bodied apparition, and so this is a primo time for people to utilize the technology they have at their disposal and get involved with your festival. So I mean, how is this going to be set up in terms of presentation?
Well, the place where we have the convention or the conference is actually Moraine Valley Community College. So there are, in the building that we house the event, there are several large, like, banquet meeting rooms, and then there, directly adjacent, or actually between two of them, is a room that's specifically set up for films and for digital presentations and things of that nature. So during the entire festival, we'll be actually presenting the videos that we receive or have received over the course of the several months leading up to the conference. And then once the conference closes on Sunday night, then we'll be actually having a banquet and making the awards then.
Okay, we're going to take a break, and let's hold it there for a second. When we come back, we'll talk more about this fantastic event, how you can get involved either as a filmmaker or as somebody who wants to just go there and see what's put together. And we're also going to talk more with Grandmaster Tom Cameron about, of course, his work and what we're learning about projecting the human energy field. I'm Joshua P. Warren. Tonight's show is presented by Wright's Coin Shop. You're listening to Speaking of Strange. Do you think you can tell? Yes, the program where we explore the amazing, the remarkable, the extraordinary, the downright weird. I'm Joshua P. Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange, presented by Wright's Coin Shop. And again, the number to Wright's Coin Shop in Asheville, North Carolina is 828-298-5402. That's 828-298-5402. I'm talking right now with Grandmaster Tom Cameron, who's joining us from Chicago, Illinois. And we got cut off by the break there, Tom, so I'll let you finish your thought as you were describing the setup for your upcoming Paranormal Film Festival.
Oh, so I was saying that the competition actually concludes about a month or so before the conference, so that the judges have enough time to view all of the entrants, and then the award ceremony is going to be the closing night of the conference. So if people are interested in submitting films for review or to enter the competition, they just have to go up to a website, www.filmfreeway.com. It's kind of like a clearinghouse for all kinds of film competitions, and ours, as far as I can tell, is the only one that deals in the paranormal in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that you bring this up, because I was just recently on this website, filmfreeway.com, because I recently shot a kind of slightly paranormal-themed comedy here in the Caribbean with C. Eric Scott, and we're going to be submitting that soon to certain film festivals. And if I'm not mistaken, the way that this website works is you upload your movie, it doesn't cost you any money, and then they will turn around and they'll send it to up to like 3,000 different film festivals for you, and they'll do a lot of the legwork. And so that's really cool that you're going to be a part of that, because as you said, I don't recall ever seeing a film festival that specializes in paranormal documentaries, as difficult as that is to believe, because there's plenty of people out there capturing this stuff. So if somebody wants to submit something, again, you said you have three basic categories. One basically deals with spirits of the afterlife, the other one with maybe UFOs and ET, and then the other one is more sort of miscellaneous. Well, is there a category for, say, short film versus feature film, or any kind of a breakdown within those categories that somebody who is a filmmaker might need to keep in mind from a technical standpoint?
Right. The each of those categories is broken down just exactly as you said. It's broken down into shorts, where we require a minimum of 10 minutes in length, not including credits and all the rest of that, because I don't want somebody showing me 30 seconds of a ghost and then 9.5 minutes of credits of people that were there.
Right.
So 10 minutes to an hour, and then anything over an hour is considered feature length. So those are the two divisions, and there is fees for submitting to the festival. They're minimal, but the other thing to keep in mind is they do keep on going up the later you are in the festival. You know, if you're submitting it the last day, it's almost twice as much as if you get it in within the next couple of weeks. So,
and this is going to be a good opportunity. Is it going to be a good opportunity for people to get their work in front of TV producers as well, who might actually give them a TV show opportunity?
Absolutely. And the other people that I think about are the people that actually produce videos for like YouTube and things like that, like the UFO channel and things like that. There's no reason that they can't submit one of their more documentarian type of video to this type of a film fest to bring greater attention to their channel, to their internet channels.
I'm kind of surprised, Tom, that nobody, to my knowledge, has made a feature documentary about what you do and your life story, especially since that you have already received a lot of good national and international TV coverage. And do you find that, not to completely get off track here when it comes to the film festival, but do you find that your work is as a practitioner in the martial arts, is it evolving, or are you pretty much right where you think you need to be?
Well, that's an interesting question. I mean, you get to a point where, you know, the purpose behind my investigating martial arts initially was just simply self-defense. You know, as I've said before, I grew up in a really, really rough area. My high school newspaper literally had an obituary column. So I had to learn to defend myself. So you get to a point where, okay, the initial purposes have been met. I can adequately defend myself against any and all comers, depending on the situation. I mean, if he's got an Uzi and he's standing 30 feet away, I'm going to die like everybody else. But the metaphysical and the paranormal aspects of it, the energetic aspects of it, you keep on growing in that because of not only because of the personal and mental benefits that you get, the calmness, the certitude, the self the self awareness, but also because of the health benefits as well. You know, I had alluded to, you know, changing the atmosphere in my house and getting the energy set the way that I wanted to. And as I shared with you earlier on in the week, since January I've dropped almost 70 pounds. So I was always I've been a chronically obese person all of my life. That's been one of my significant battles, if you will. And now that I've been able to take control of not only my physical surroundings but my energetic surroundings, all of a sudden the weight is literally just falling off.
Wow, that's fantastic. And but you can't take those stomach blows anymore, can you?
Yeah, actually I'm able to do it better because the muscles are closer together. They're actually able to wave at each other now.
Well, you know, I've always understood from my research in the martial arts that ultimately when it comes to practical purposes, the number one goal is to avoid a physical confrontation, and because that should only be a last resort. That said, you've been training people for many decades now, and a lot of those people started out as kids, and they are now adults. And how often has a student of yours come back and said, whoa, I actually got into a physical confrontation and I use some of these techniques in the real world? Does that happen a lot? Or, I mean, how do most people apply this after they take this training?
Oh, absolutely. Because particularly over the last few years, I really have been specializing more in teaching adults than in kids, because the stuff that I teach is pretty aggressive. So most of my students have been either police or corrections officers or security officers like myself, or, you know, in some form or field that you're likely to have these kinds of confrontations. In fact, I've got one of my students, he's a corrections officer in Cook County Jail, which is an incredibly rough place to begin with, but he's in D block, which is the maximum security, you know, murderers and rapists and all the rest of that. And when I've had conversations with him, he said, you know, he uses my stuff literally every day and has for the last 12 years, I think. And he said, my stuff has never once failed to work. It's kept him safe. It's kept him secure. About 6 months ago, one of my students, who's a Chicago fireman, fell and broke his back. And because because he was in really good shape to begin with, but also because he used the energy and we worked the energy with him and with some of my other students, we were doing long range energy work on him. He's already back at work.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to take another break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about self-defense techniques with Tom Cameron. And also, I'd like to touch on some of the experiments that we've discussed with Tom in the past, interesting little things that you might be able to do at your home, maybe affecting the way a plant grows or the way that mold will form on some type of fruit that you put in a jar, that kind of thing. These might be feedback devices for you as you exercise your own bioenergy field. And of course, we'll definitely get again into this film festival because we want as many people as possible to submit some good stuff. I'm Joshua P. Warren. Tonight's show is presented by Wright's Coin Shop. This is Speaking of Strange. The show where the unusual becomes usual. It is called Speaking of Strange. I am Joshua P. Warren. Tonight's show is presented by Wright's Coin Shop in Asheville, North Carolina. And I'm talking this hour with Grandmaster Tom Cameron, Death Touch Tom, the human stun gun, a man who has been seen practicing martial arts on all kinds of national and international TV programs for many, many years. And before we get back into this conversation, here's a little tip that I'll give everybody listening to the show. I recently bought a nice little pack of a variety of these super bright flashlights, like Surefire and Ultrafire. And, you know, the cool thing about a really bright tactical flashlight is that if somebody's coming at you, it doesn't matter what they want to do. If they want to shoot you or stab you or punch you, if they can't see all of a sudden, then they can't do very much unless you're fighting Daredevil or something like that. And it's so easy to just pull out a flashlight and just blast somebody right in the face with it and at least maybe give yourself a little window to get out of there. And if you're somebody who's uncomfortable owning, say, a gun or a knife or a traditional weapon, or you feel like maybe that's just not something you would have the skill to wield properly, you can't go wrong by just having a good, strong flashlight with you anywhere you go. Wouldn't you agree with that, Tom?
Absolutely. I mean, the passive weapons, like the flashlights and things of that nature, they're great utilitarian types of self-defense that, like you say, it takes absolutely no skill or no practice to use. That's the biggest problem with martial arts is the amount of time that it consumes while you're trying to develop your skills. It takes regular practice, where something like that can keep you safe without having any need for a time investment.
I had gotten a pretty cool thing at a truck stop not too long ago, which was a super high powered LED aluminum baseball bat.
Oh, I thought you were going to say gonorrhea, Sam.
No, that was at a rest area.
oh, okay. Wrong story.
But it was super high power.
No, but it was like it had the LEDs, it had the flasher, so it would be like, it would like disorient you, you know? And then like you had an aluminum ball bat built into it. It was pretty cool. Somebody stole it out of my car, though. So it doesn't do any good if it's stolen.
Well, yes, and the problem with longer weapons like that is...
They can be taken away.
Yeah, it can be leveraged out of your hand.
Yes.
You know, Tom, when people think about you most of the time, if they don't know you, they've just seen you on TV, you know, they think about you doing your energy projection demonstrations, where it looks like, in many cases, you're sending out, you know, a blast of energy and then it knocks somebody out. And you have practiced many different techniques for energy projection over the years. And if somebody listening to this program would like to do some experiments on his or her own, trying to learn how to project energy, what are some simple things that you would advise someone to do?
Well, one of the first things that we teach our students, because I understand that the students that I'm teaching are American or Westernized, and that this is a new concept for them. So one of the things that we do in order for them to become more comfortable, or at least to validate in their own mind that they're actually doing something, is we have them take a couple empty jars, like baby food jars, and put either slices of cucumber in it or something that's fairly perishable. You know, cucumbers usually work well, tomatoes. And we tell them every day, several times a day, to pick up the jars individually. And one jar is supposed to be your good thoughts jar, and the other jar is supposed to be your negative thoughts jar. And just to, you know, take 5 minutes, 3 minutes, whatever it might be, a couple times a day, and pick up the good jar, and I love you, I appreciate the, you know, I appreciate the energy, you know, things like that. And then to pick up the bad jar, and, oh my God, I hated that guy that cut me off, oh, what a jerk my boss is, that type of stuff. And to see the difference that that forms as a result of just projecting those, the difference between the positive and negative thoughts into those jars. And one of the great proponents of that is Dr. Masaru Emoto. You know, he used to do it with water, and then he would freeze the water to show the formation of the crystals and how differentiated it was when you had negative thought as opposed to positive thought. Well, this is a real world and a real easy way for people to be able to actually see. As you said, you know, people are visually constructed. They tend to believe much more what they can actually see. So, we've used grapes, we've used cherries and things like that. But usually at the end of 2 weeks, the jar that has the negative thoughts in it is moldy and fungus-ridden and, you know, rotting. And when we've done the grapes, the jar that hid the grapes in it turned in with the positive thoughts turned into wine.
Now, this may sound like a weird question to a lot of people listening right now, but if you end up, unfortunately, in a fight scenario, and you are trying to, you know, project energy, and I'm not just talking about the way you do it in a demo, but you're getting yourself pumped to engage this person, are you tapping more into the good thought energy or the bad thought energy when that happens?
You have to tap into the positive. You have to tap into almost like a tranquility, if you will. Some people have talked about, you know, thinking about water or be like water so that you can move. Because if you are angry, that tightens the muscles. It makes it slower for response and things like that. It's kind of funny, and I don't know if people think I'm being sarcastic when I say it, but what I'm actually thinking about is I'm trying to educate this person so that they don't make themselves or so that they don't give themselves worse karma.
So, Tom, how long does a usual confrontation, a physical confrontation, last in the real world?
If you are a skilled fighter, should not last longer than 3 or 4 seconds.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, basically, you want to end it in one blow, right?
And one technique, which, you know, which may involve two or three different hits or two or three different actions. But, yeah, it should be over very quickly. You don't want to give the person who's assailing you any kind of a time to understand what's taking place. You want to put them in pain and put them out of reach of you as quickly as possible. So.
Now, as I mentioned, a lot of people call you Death Touch Tom, and that's because that you are one of the people who actually has been trained in the technique that Nee would refer to as the Death Touch. I know that there are mixed feelings about that terminology, but for the sake of explaining to people the practical aspect of this, when you were taught, when you reached a point where somebody felt that you were responsible enough to know a technique that could instantly kill somebody, what did they tell you about the conditions that you needed to place on when to teach somebody else how to do this?
Well, it's obviously a matter of judgment. Normally, you don't give somebody lethal techniques until you know that they're of a personality type that's going to things that my teacher told me is I no longer had the right, and I thought that was an interesting choice of words, that I no longer had the right to lose my temper. Because if I lost my temper, by the time I regained my temper, even if it was only a lapse of 5 or 6 seconds, somebody could be dead. You know, they obviously recommend that, you know, that you don't do any drinking or certainly any kind of heavy drinking or anything of that nature that might compromise your ability to make those types of judgments. So you, as you're working with a student, you press them and you press them hard. I mean, you put them in high tension situations as much as you're able to within the course of a classroom or instruction. And see if they're the type that blow a gasket, or if they're able to maintain their cool, if they're able to maintain their composure. Then, if they are able to do that, then you can trust them, and you give them one of the serious techniques, but you still don't trust them necessarily with the deepest levels until you see how they handle with the progressively more lethal or progressively more damaging techniques.
Yeah. Okay, we are up on our next break, and gosh, when we come back, we will be in the last segment of this hour with Grandmaster Tom Cameron, and so we will have him recap the information regarding his upcoming Paranormal Film Festival, how that you can learn more about it, how you can become involved if you want to submit something, as well as how you can plan to be there and to see some of this stuff as a part of his conference this fall. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to Speaking of Strange.
What's up, bro? It's your boy, Cyril. Now I know how to get down on the floor. Experienced in moves you can't ignore. But something about this beat that's got me hooked. Come over here and take a closer look. 'Cause I can't get enough, I can't get enough, I can't stay on the ground. Whoa, I can't get enough, I can't get enough, this is taking me now. It's taking me higher off the ground. It's taking me higher.
And we are in the final minutes of hour number two on tonight's Speaking of Strange. I'm Joshua P. Warren, and mind you now, next hour of the show is what we call the Dark 30 Hour, and that is when we dig into some of the more outrageous and controversial news stories, more sordid and seedy, not for the easily offended, not for kids. That's why we save it for late at night, so you can stick around if you want to listen to that kind of content. But right now, I'm wrapping up a conversation with Grandmaster Tom Cameron. And, of course, as he said during the start of the interview, well, his big film festival is it's coming up. And right now, if you're a filmmaker, you need to start looking into your submissions. There are a couple of website addresses you need to write down. One of them is Palos Paranormal. That's spelled P-A-L-O-S, palosparanormal.com. And then, of course, there is filmfreeway.com. Tom, if somebody goes to filmfreeway.com and decides to search for your festival, what do they need to search for?
The name of the film festival is the Richard T. Crowe, C-R-O-W-E, Film Festival.
Okay. And can people submit right now?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay.
It's so up and running, and all of the guidelines for submission are up on the website there.
Okay. Well, let me just give you the floor here for the next few minutes to tell everybody as much as you want about the festival and your event in general, however they want to participate, if it's submitting a movie or just coming to enjoy the show when everything's ready to experience.
Well, the film festival and the paranormal conference is at Moraine Valley Community College, which is in the far southwest suburbs of the Chicago area. It's a beautiful facility. It's a beautiful campus, and it's uniquely situated in that within 7 miles of the conference are some of the most well-documented haunting spots that people can come and visit. You and I have visited a few of them ourselves. The Willowbrook Ballroom, which is where Resurrection Mary was dancing the night of her death. Resurrection Cemetery is right nearby. Bachelor's Grove Cemetery is nearby. The canal at St. James, which is a haunted monastery, or was a haunted monastery. So there are actually 10 significant haunting spots that people, if they come to the conference, can go and visit and do their own investigations as well. But at the conference itself, we've got ghost hunters, we've got filmmakers, we've got aura photography, as you had mentioned before. We've got all kinds of people that do alternative health, Ayurvedic, Reiki, craniosacral therapies. It's a wide variety of vendors. Many of the vendors are giving free lectures, and then they also have extended workshops that people can participate in for a small additional fee. So it's past life therapy. I've got a superb past life therapy person by the name of Greg Paxson, who's been on Art Bell and many other shows, and he's going to be doing a workshop and lecture there also. So just about anything that is paranormal, abnormal, metaphysical, supernatural, we've got somebody there that's representative of it.
And what are your dates again?
October 15th and 16th. So this is all in the procession up to Halloween.
Oh, boy. That's just perfect. I mean, it's almost too much, isn't it? It's just it's overwhelming. I've been in Chicago a number of times in the middle of October, and there is electricity in the air, and everybody is psyched about Halloween. The decorations are all over the place. The masks are on sale, and you know, Chicago it's really just a huge, beautiful, gothic, spooky-looking city anyway. It truly is Gotham City. So I cannot recommend it highly enough to anybody listening. Whether or not you've been to Chicago, if you've never been at Halloween time, go ahead and plan this and schedule it right now. As a matter of fact, I'm going to do my best to be there as well. Alas, the clock has got us, but, you know, Tom, you continue to do fantastic work. It's a thrill to see you use people and all of these techniques and philosophies, and I can't wait to see how this film festival turns out. Hopefully you and I will be able to connect even before then. We'll talk a little bit more about some other experiments that we might be able to do. But, hey, it's always fun to have you. So thank you once again for being on Speaking of Strange.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Joshua, as always. Be well, my friend, and I'm looking forward to our next meeting.
Likewise. All right, everybody. There you have it. Grandmaster Tom Cameron. Again, here are those websites. Palos Paranormal, that's P-A-L-O-S, that's P as in Paul, right? PalosParanormal.com. Or if you want to submit to the film festival, go to FilmFreeway.com and look up the Richard T. Crowe Film Festival. Crowe, spelled C-R-O-W-E. Again, he's the famous ghost hunter, the Great Lake Ghost Hunter from Chicago, Richard T. Crowe Film Festival. We're going to take a break. When we come back, it will be time for the infamous, the notorious Dark 30 Hour here on Speaking of Strange.